They think I falsified it. They think I'm a cheat, a liar. And he nearly collapsed into her arms. More than an hour had passed. Lara still held her husband in her arms as they sat on the couch. He was still shuddering, his face buried in her breast, his arms wrapped around her, mumbling incoherently. Lara patted his disheveled hair soothingly. Haltingly, little by little, he had told her what had transpired at the meeting with McFerguson and the other scientists. She had murmured consoling words, but she knew that nothing she could say would help her husband. He had been accused of cheating, and even if he eventually proved he hadn't, the stigma would remain with him all his life. "I'm ruined," he whimpered. "Destroyed." "No, it's not that bad," she cooed.
"Yes, it is."
"It will pass," she said, trying to ease his pain. Abruptly, he pushed away from her.
"You don't understand. You just don't understand."
His eyes were red, his hair wild and matted with perspiration.
"I'm done. Finished. They've destroyed me. It would have been kinder if they'd blown my brains out."
Lara sat up straighter. "You are not finished, Victor," she said firmly. "Not if you fight back." His expression went from despair to disgust. "Fight back," he growled. "You can't fight them."
"You can if you have the courage to do it," she snapped, feeling angry with her husband's self-pity, angry at the vicious fools who did this to him, angry at whoever caused this disaster. "You don't have to let them walk all over you. You can stand up and fight. You don't know..."
"Somebody sent you a message, didn't they?"
"Yes, but..."
"You have a record of that message?"
"In my files, yes,"
Lara said. "Whoever sent that message to you probably put those Martian rocks at the site you found." Melina blinked several times.
"Yes, but McFerguson and the others think that I set that up using a stooge."
"Proves that they're wrong."
"How in hell—"
"Find the man who set you up," Lara said. "He had to come to Mercury to plant those rocks at the site. He's probably still here."
"Do you think—"
Melina fell silent. Lara studied his face. He wasn't bleating anymore. She could see the change in his eyes.
"I don't think anybody's left Mercury since I arrived here. Certainly none of the team down at the base on the surface. None of Yamagata's people, I'm pretty sure."
"Then whoever set you up is probably still here."
"But how can we find him?"
Before Lara could think of an answer, they heard a soft rap at their door.
"I'll get it," she said, jumping to her feet. "You go wash up and comb your hair."
She slid the door open. Bishop Danvers's big, blocky body nearly filled the doorway.
"Hello, Lara," he said softly. "I've come to do what I can to solace Victor and help him in his hour of need."
Lara almost smiled. "Come right in, Elliot. We're going to need all the help we can get."
In his bare little office at Goethe Base, Dante Alexios heard the news directly from Yamagata. "It was all a hoax," Yamagata was grinning from ear to ear. "The rocks were planted here. They actually came from Mars." "Molina assaulted the site?" Alexios asked, trying to look astonished. "Either he or a Confederate." "That's shocking." "Perhaps so. But it means that the blasted scientists have withdrawn their interdict on our operations." "So soon?" Yamagata shrugged. "They will, in a day or so. In the meantime, I want you to come up here to Himawari first thing tomorrow morning. We must plan the next phase of our operation. Building power sats here, out of materials from Mercury itself." "Yes, using nanomachines." Alexios nodded. "We'll have to plan this very carefully." "I realize that," Yamagata said, his grin fading only slightly. "That's why I want you here first thing in the morning." "I'll be there." "Good." Yamagata's image winked out. Alexios leaned back in his chair and clasped his hands behind his head. "Victor's finished," he said to himself. "Now to get Danvers. And then, my dear employer, Mr. Saito Yamagata, the murderer."
Book 2, 10 years earlier. And much of madness and more of sin, and horror the soul of the plot.
The Sky Tower. Laura Tierney couldn't catch her breath. It wasn't merely the altitude, although at more than 3,000 meters the air was almost painfully thin. What really took her breath away, though, was the sight of the tower splitting the sky as the ancient Humvee rattled and jounced along the rutted, climbing road. Mance, sitting beside her, handed her a lightweight pair of electronic binoculars.
"They'll lock onto the tower," he shouted over the grinding roar of the Humvee's diesel engine. "Keep it in focus for you."
Lara put the binoculars to her eyes and found that they really did make up for some of the bumps in the Humvee's punishing ride. The sky tower wavered briefly, then clicked into sharp focus, a thick, dark column of what looked in the twin eyepieces like intertwined cables spiraling up, up, higher and higher, through the soft clouds and into the blue sky beyond, up into infinity.
"It's like a banyan tree," she gasped, resting the binoculars on her lap.
"What?" Mance Bracknell yelled from beside her. They were sitting together on the bench behind the driver, a short, stocky, dark-skinned mestizo who had inherited this rusting, dilapidated four-wheel drive from his father, the senior taxi entrepreneur of the Quito airport. Laura took several deep breaths, trying to get enough air into her lungs to raise her voice above the noise of the Humvee's clattering diesel engine.
"It's like a banyan tree," she shouted back, turning toward him. "All those strands, woven together, like a banyan."
She had to pull in more air.
"Right, that's exactly right," Mance yelled, his dark brown eyes gleaming excitedly. "Like a banyan tree. It's organic. Nanotubes spun into filaments and then wrapped into coils. The coils are wound into those cables you're looking at."
She had never seen him so tanned, so athletically fit, so indestructibly cheerful. He looks more handsome than ever, she thought.
"Just like a banyan tree," he repeated, straining to make himself heard. "Damned near 100,000 individual buckyball fibers wound into those strands. Strongest structure on the face of the earth.
It's magnificent." Bracknell's smile grew wider.
"We're still almost 30 kilometers away. Wait till you get up close."
Like the beanstalk of the old fairy tale, the sky tower rose up into the heavens. Lara spent the jouncing, dusty ride alternately staring at it and then glancing at Mance, sitting there as happy as a little boy on Christmas morning opening his presents. "He's doing something that no one else has been able to do," she thought, "and he's succeeding. He has what he wants, and that includes me." All during the long flight from Denver to Quito, she had wondered about her impulsive promise to marry Mance Bracknell. For the past 3 years, all she'd seen of him was his quick visits back to the States and his occasional video messages. He had gone to Ecuador, asked her to marry him, and she had agreed. She had flown to Quito once before, where Mance was just starting on the project. He was so busy, so happily buried in his work, that she had quietly returned home to Colorado. He didn't need her underfoot, and he barely raised more than a perfunctory objection when she told him she was going back home. That was more than 3 years ago. I have a rival for his attentions, Laura realized. This tower he's building. She wondered if her rival would always stand between them. But when Mance called this latest time and asked her to come to Ecuador and stay with him, she had agreed immediately, even though he hadn't mentioned a word about marriage. Once she saw him, though, waiting for her at the airport terminal in Quito, the way his whole face lit up when he caught sight of her, the frenetic way he waved to her from the other side of the glass security partition as she went through the tiresome lines at customs, the way he smiled and took her in his arms and kissed her right there in the middle of the crowded airport terminal. She knew she loved him, and she would follow him wherever he went, rival and marriage and everything else fading into trivia.
"If it works," he was hollering over the rumble of the truck's groaning engine,